wait for real-time, face-to-face chat. So Pancho rattled on, hoping that Chris Cardenas would reply as quickly as possible. "I know it's a lot to ask, Dr. Cardenas," she was saying. "You've spent a lot of years there at Sirius and made a life for yourself. But this migration out to Saturn is a chance to build something brand new for yourself. They'll be happy to have your expertise. You can count on that. There's probably a million ways your knowledge of nanotechnology will help them." By force of habit, Pancho glanced up at the image floating in the middle of her office. Instead of Chris Cardenas's face, it showed only her own neatly typed words. "I'll personally pay all your expenses and add a big bonus," Pancho went on. "I'll pay for a major expansion of your habitat out there at Ceres. She's my little sister, Chris, and she needs somebody to watch over her. I can't do it. I'm hoping you can. Will you do this for me? Just for a year or so? Just long enough so Sis gets squared away and can stand on her own feet without doing anything foolish? Will you help me on this, Chris? I really think it'll be to your advantage, and I'd appreciate it enormously." Pancho realized she was practically begging, almost whining. "So what?" she asked herself. "This is Susie I'm talking about." But she took a breath and said more evenly, "Please get back to me as soon as you can on this, Chris. It's important to me."
In her cozy quarters aboard the habitat Chrysalis, in orbit around the asteroid Ceres, Chris Cardenas intently watched Pancho's earnest face as the Astro Corporation board chairman paced back and forth across her plushly furnished office. Cardenas noted the tension in every line of Pancho's lanky body, every gesture, every word she spoke. "I don't owe her a thing," Cardenas told herself. "Why should I uproot myself and trundle out to Saturn on that weird expedition?" Yet, despite herself, she felt intrigued. "Maybe it's time for a change in my life. Maybe I've done enough penance." Despite her calendar years, Dr. Kristen Cardenas looked no more than 30-ish, a pert, sandy blonde woman with a swimmer's shoulders and a strong, athletic body and bright cornflower blue eyes. That was because her body teemed with nanomachines, virus-sized devices that acted as a deliberate, directed immune system that destroyed invading organisms, took apart plaque forming in her blood vessels atom by atom, and rebuilt tissue damaged by trauma or aging. Cardenas had won a Nobel Prize for her research in nanotechnology before the fundamentalist governments of Earth succeeded in banning all forms of nanotech on the planet. She had carried on her work at Cellini for years, helping the Lunar Nation to win its short, virtually bloodless war against the former world government. But because she had taken nanomachines into her own body, she was not allowed to return to Earth, even for a brief visit. She lost her husband and children because they dared not come to Cellini and risk being exiled from Earth with her. Cardenas bitterly resented the short-sighted attitudes of the Flatlanders who had cost her children and grandchildren, a bitterness that led her to homicide. She allowed her knowledge of nanotechnology to be used to sabotage a spacecraft which caused the death of industrialist Dan Randolph. The government of Cellini locked her out of her own nanotech lab. She fled to the mining station on Ceres in the asteroid belt, where she remained for many years, serving as a medical doctor and eventually as a member of Ceres' governing board. Penance. She helped to build the miners' community at Ceres, and she had refused to do any nanotech work since fleeing from Cellini. "Am I being foolish?" she now asked herself. "Should I apply for a slot on the Saturn expedition? Would they take me if I did apply?" Staring at Pancho's engrossed image frozen on her wall screen, Cardenas decided to try. "It's time to begin a new life in a new world," she thought. "Time for a new start."
When she received Cardenas's request, Holly raced from her desk to find Eberly. He was in the office complex's cafeteria, sitting with Morgenthau and a lean, skeletally thin man whose complexion was darker than her own, the nearly purple-black of the true African. They were deep in an intense discussion, their heads leaning forward like conspirators. Holly scurried up to their table and stood at Eberly's elbow. None of them paid any attention to her. They continued to talk in hushed, confidential tones, too low for Holly to hear their words over the clatter and conversations that clanged off the bare walls of the busy cafeteria. She waited several moments, fidgeting impatiently, then broke into their tête-à-tête with, "Excuse me, Malcolm, I hate to interrupt, but..." Eberly looked up sharply at her, clear displeasure in his piercing eyes. "I'm sorry, Malcolm, but it's important." He took a breath, then said, "What is important enough to intrude in my discussion?" "Dr. Cardenas wants to join us."
"Cardenas?" asked Morgenthau.
"Kristen Cardenas," Holly said, grinning enthusiastically, "the nanotech expert. She won the Nobel Prize, and she wants to come with us." Eberly seemed less than pleased.
"Do we need an expert in nanotechnology?"
"That's a dangerous area," said the black man.
His scalp was shaved bald, although there was a fringe of a beard outlining his jawline.
"It's outlawed on Earth," Morgenthau agreed, adding a muttered, "unholy."
Holly was surprised at their obtuseness. "Nanotech could be really helpful to us. We could use nanomachines to do most of the habitat's maintenance work, and health-wise, nanomachines could..." Eberly stopped her with an upraised finger.
"Nanomachines are outlawed on Earth because they could run wild and devour everything in their path."
"Turn everything into gray goo," Morgenthau muttered.
"Only if somebody programs them to do that," Holly countered. "Those Flatlanders back Earthside are scared of terrorists or nutcases going wild with nanomachines."
Morgenthau glared at her but said nothing.
"Shouldn't we be concerned about that as well?" Eberly asked mildly. "We've screened everybody aboard," Holly said. "We don't have any violent types here, no fanatics."
"How can we be sure of that?" Morgenthau was obviously unconvinced.
Looking at Eberly, the black man said slowly,
"Properly used, nanomachines could be of great help to us."
Eberly stared back at him for a long moment.
"You believe so?"
"I do."
"Would Dr. Cardenas agree to work under our terms, I wonder?" Eberly mused.
"We could ask her and find out," Holly prompted. "She's on Ceres now. We could pick her up when we go through the belt. I checked the flight plan. We'll be within a day's flight of Ceres. She could buzz out to us on a torch ship, no prob. I could get my sister to set up a flight for her, betcha."
Eberly stroked his chin. "Even though we have a full complement now, I suppose we could make room for one person of Dr. Cardenas's caliber."
"If Wilmot approves of it," said Morgenthau.
"Wilmot," Eberly almost sneered.
"I'm in charge of human resources decisions, not Wilmot. But something like this, I'll take care of it," he insisted.
Turning to Holly, he said, "Inform Dr. Cardenas that I would like to discuss this with her personally."
"Cosmic," Holly blurted.
She was about to turn and head back to the human resources office when Eberly grasped her wrist.
"You haven't met Colonel Kananga, have you?"
The black man got to his feet like a jointed scaffolding unfolding. He was almost 2 meters tall, a full head taller than Holly. "Our director of security, Colonel Leo Kananga, from Rwanda," said Eberly.
"Holly Lane, from Salini."
Kananga extended his hand. Holly took it in hers. His long fingers felt cold and dry. His grip was strong, almost painful. Kananga smiled at her, but there was no warmth in it, just the opposite. Holly felt an icy shudder run down her spine. It was like looking at a skull, a death's head. Departure plus 145 days. As she climbed the stairs to the roof of the administration building, Holly wondered why Eberly had summoned her to the rooftop. She stepped through the metal door and looked for him. No one else was there. She walked to within 2 steps of the roof's edge and turned full circle. She was alone. "He's always so prompt," she thought. "Why isn't he here?" Then she realized that she was more than a minute early,
and she relaxed somewhat.